ready.
NBC didn't have to create rape allegations to keep from selling to Bill Cosby. That's like me saying I don't want to sell you my car, but then going around telling people you rob banks.
For real talk.
Hey man, I'm just gonna say it. If you don't think you sexist, ask yourself why you champion LeVar Ball but think Cardi B should go away.
All the time.
Not everybody's gonna like it, but don't ever, ever apologize for trying to be a better person.
Welcome to the Spann Report with your host, Mr. Spann.
Welcome to the Spann Report Podcast. I'm your host, Mr. Spann. This is episode number 186 of the report. And right now, we're rocking out to some old Dave Hollister, man. One Addiction off of the Things in the Game Done Changed album. Rock out with your boy.
I need rehabilitation. I must admit, I'm sure Kashawn is young.
Yes, indeed, man. We are back here on a Sunday afternoon, man. We're not doing this late. We got a lot of stuff to do today. You know, Walking Dead comes on later tonight. You know, I'm having people over here later today. Like, so it's going to be a thing, man. I had to get this in, get this out, because I haven't been on the mic for over a month. Not a month. Last time I talked to y'all was Halloween shit. So, yeah, it's been a minute since I did a show. I've been really busy, and I'm going to talk to you guys a little bit about that here in a second. But before, of course, I get into the rest of the show, I got to let you guys know how to get in touch with me here at the Spann Report Podcast and let your voice be heard. Go ahead, hit me up at the hotline at area code 313-288-0485. That's area code 313-288-0485. Leave those voicemail messages. Of course, I'll play them on the show and respond right here in kind. You can also email me here at feedback@thespannreport.com. That's feedback@thespannreport.com. Leave those emails. I will read those emails and respond to you here live on the show as well. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram. My name on both of those platforms is Mr_Spann. So go ahead and follow me there. Chop it up with your boy throughout the week. Also, leave a 5-star review on iTunes and on Stitcher Radio, man. 5-star views, preferably. Those 5-star views get read right here live on the show. And for all of your Spann Report needs, man, go to www.thespannreport.com. Everything's available there. You can watch the podcast there. Let me turn that music off. You can watch the podcast there, man. You can listen to the podcast there. You can vote in the polls, man. You can leave comments. Everything's available there. You can donate to the show if you like, as often as you like, and as much as you like. And of course, all of that is appreciated right here at the Spann Report, man. And yeah, that's pretty much it, man. That's pretty much it. We got the business out of the way and whatever else, man. Right. So I got a muted tone right now tonight. Well, today, because, you know, my wife is sleeping. And I ain't trying to wake her up. I don't need them problems, right? I don't need those problems, man. My wife worked, and now she's trying to get a rest, and I needed to get this in because I've been having a really, really busy week, man. Your man Spam been putting in 60-hour weeks at work, and not only that, man, my brother, my younger brother finally was released from prison, man, and so we're going to talk a little bit about that here in a minute. As a matter of fact, shit, I guess I can go ahead and just kind of get right into that. You know, like I've referenced my brother quite a bit here on the show. Well, you know, here and there on the show. You know, my brother had went away. He was like, I was 25 at the time. He was 23 and he got himself involved in some foolishness. I would much rather give him the opportunity to speak on what he did and why he did it if he ever chooses to get on the mic. But, you know, he went to prison, man. And, you know, one of the things about it, man, like I always, like, it's one of those things, man, like it was for a long time, man, it was really just me and my brother outside of my mother. It was me, my mother, and my brother. And of course we got family and stuff like that, but yeah, it's me and my brother. And, you know, me being the older brother, I always kind of felt responsible for him. And, you know, one of the things about, you know, being an older brother, man, sometimes, you know, you want to kind of, you know, lead your younger siblings in the right way. Sometimes you want to show them the right way. But then there's other times, man, where, like, you know, your siblings may not necessarily be receptive to being led or being told what to do. Or they may even resent that, right? Or being seen as the good brother or, and I'm the bad one or whatever else. And that may have had something to do with me and my brother's relationship, because I was the one who was like athletic and wanted to get into sports and stuff like that. My brother was like all about that street life. He wanted to be in the streets no matter what. He had a hustler's mentality. He's always had a hustler's mentality. He had a gift of gab. My brother can tell you a story and you would be enthralled, I'm telling you. So, you know, that gift of gab and being able to spin a story is kind of what led to him being sent away for 12 years. And, you know, he's just got out of prison, man. And, you know, over the course of the years, man, like I never went to go visit him, and it's not something that I'm like the proudest of, man. Like, and it was something that I had to like, kind of, you know, reckon with when I first saw my brother after 12 years. We hadn't seen each other in 12 years. And, you know, that was the first thing he told me. He was like, man, it hurt me that you didn't come up to see me. And, you know, he brought up a couple instances where I could have, and, you know, I didn't really have a good excuse as to why. I just kind of, I'll say, like, I kind of get enthralled in my own shit, so to speak. Like, you know, I feel like I got a lot of shit going on, and sometimes I feel like my shit is the most important shit. And if I don't take care, and I kind of got this do all mentality, like where if I don't do the things that I need to do, nobody else is going to do them for me. And so I have to do them. And then some of these other things that other folks want me to do sometimes gets pushed in the wayside. Sometimes, you know, my wife can feel that way. And sometimes my brother can feel that way. Sometimes a lot of my family can feel like I don't prioritize them in such a way. And so, like, I'm working on that. And that was one of the biggest examples of that, was me not going to see my brother. But one of the things about him coming home now is that I would hope that, you know, my biggest thing is, like, I hope my brother is, like, really on the up and up about his, you know, his rehabilitation. I hope, that, you know, I do know this, my brother's going to have some challenges coming out in 2017, 35 years old, having never really held a job, you know, being, you know, he missed the entire Obama administration kind of thing. Like, just having a relationship with his kids, you know, like he's got a lot to kind of rebuild. You know, he started from scratch at 35, you know, and that could be a very difficult thing. I can't imagine how difficult that could be. And as his older brother, I feel like it's incumbent upon me to kind of help him in any ways that I can possibly, and to kind of make up for the fact that, yo, I do feel negligent in the fact that of my older brother duties while he was in prison. No, you know, no amount of money that I could send to him and make sure that his books were straight would kind of no amount of that will kind of make up for the fact that I simply wasn't there. And so I'm going to be trying to make that up over the course of these next few years, man. Like, he's got a year parole. So we're going to try to, like, get this shit together, man, and get his life right. I'm hopefully, like I said, man, my brother will probably get on the mic at some point in time. And I got some plans for this, this podcast and additional podcasts. I got some plans, man. But, you know, I'm trying to work all of these things out, you know, and on top of, being a husband and going to work. And I got a lot of things on my plate. So, there's part of the reason as to why I hadn't been on the mic over the course of the last week, man, just like dealing with, you know, yo, my brother's come home and trying to make sure that that stuff is straight. And, yeah, it's going to be an interesting thing. Now, one of the things that I thought was, kind of fucked up though, you know, and I think this is, of course you guys know, like, as far as, you know, gun ownership and stuff like that is concerned, I'm a very big proponent of it. I think, we should take our safety into our own hands. We should be responsible for that. And not depend on anybody else for our safety and our protection. And I'm, you know, I own guns. I own a few. And, you know, the thing that was interesting was, when I went to go see my brother couldn't ride in the car with me because I was carrying a weapon. My brother can't visit my home because I have guns in my home. And there's a law here in the state of Michigan where if a, you know, former prisoner is on probation or on parole, that if they are, like, they have a zero tolerance policy here, no matter if they, like, if you have a relative who is licensed by the state to carry a firearm or own a firearm, no matter if, you know, like, you know, the weapons are, you know, legally owned, no matter even if the parolee or the probationer has any knowledge of there being firearms in the vicinity, if they are caught with someone who has a firearm, they can go back to prison for at least 5 years. And, you know, I think that's real fucked up, you know, because it's, for one, lazy is it for me. Like, I kind of feel like it's lazy legislation, right? It leaves no room for fucking interpretation. It leaves no room for, actually thinking about what the situation entailed that would have a prisoner or former prisoner, a parolee or probationer, to have them in a situation where where they can face being incarcerated once again. Like, if I had something in my house, right? I'm having people over, my brother's over, and somebody comes by the house and I don't know that they're carrying a firearm on them, and the police just happen to drop by because, of course, you know, like, my brother's still on parole. They can probably just kind of, you know, roll up, and somebody in the house has a gun. Now my brother goes back to jail for 5 years, despite the fact that he had absolutely no clue that this person had a gun on him. He's not about to frisk everybody that comes through the door. I'm not about to frisk everybody who comes through my door. But the fact that I would have to do that, just based on the fact that my brother is a parolee, I think is really fucked up. I think it's really fucked up that, you know, it's a real undercutted way to try to get people to get rid of their guns, to say that, well, okay, your relative is a convicted felon and they're on parole, they're on probation, and while they're on parole or on probation, you can't have any guns around them, despite the fact that you did nothing wrong. Yeah, I think it's really fucked up. I think it's incumbent upon legislators to be fucking proactive and actually be smart about your legislation. Stop being so fucking lazy. Stop putting it to where you don't have to think about what you have to do and having automatic triggers to lock people up. And it's one of those things where, like, people always talk about the justice system being broken. This is another example of that. Because, again, I haven't done anything. My wife hasn't done anything. My brother is coming off of a 12-year stint. He doesn't want to go back to jail. We're not trying to put him in a position to go back to jail. But the fact that I can't have my brother over with there for being firearms in my home is fucked up. And, you know, with us being, I'm pretty much the only family he has left in the state. So, like, what the fuck? You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, man, it's been, I hate to start off the show all, like, low and glum and all this other shit, but yeah, man, it's been some stuff I've been dealing with, and some stuff, you know, some things that have just kind of been going on with me as far as keeping me off the mic for, of course, over the last course of the last week. Another thing that I kind of wanted to talk about too, man, like, social media has been kind of strange with your boy lately. I got banned from doing live videos on YouTube, right? Now, the funny thing about me being banned from doing live videos on YouTube for the court, I think it's 90 days. I got a 90-day ban on YouTube. I had a video up. As a matter of fact, I'm going to show you the video because it's bad. They took it off of my page, right? But I'm going to show you guys a video that was on my page on YouTube, and it had been on my page for 7 years. This video had been on my page for 7 years. I'm going to pull this video up really quick, just a second. And many of you may remember this video because it went viral. Lots of folks had posted this video on YouTube. It's still on YouTube today. But somebody flagged this video as bullying on my page. And now YouTube has banned me from doing live videos on their platform for 90 days. Wait, that's not how you spell it. Okay, so I know you guys remember there was this video.
Why you being this so guy, hustle, man?
Check this out.
Well, you better be pissed off if you stop.
Take your ass back up.
Because you ain't.
Right.
You ain't scared this white boy. I'm 67 years old. You ain't scared of me.
I'm 50.
You ain't scared of me. You ain't scared of me.
I'll put my foot up your
ass. No, you won't. You get my foot up your ass.
I'll put my foot up your ass.
This old man whip your ass.
And then about that.
I'll put my foot up your ass.
You won't do nothing to me. Just be another tear.
Say it again. Say it.
Say it again. Say it again. Say it again, Pinky.
All right, now, I don't know how many of you guys remember this.
He fucking hit me first. But he hit me in the face.
I had this video on my channel. I had this video on my channel for 7 years. Somebody flagged a video on YouTube and tagged it as bullying. YouTube decided to suspend my channel. I can't broadcast on YouTube. The good thing is I don't broadcast on YouTube anymore. I can't do any live videos on YouTube. And if I chose to do any live videos, I would probably do it on Facebook as opposed to YouTube nowadays because of the way, like, YouTube is doing a whole lot of fuck shit lately. But yeah, man, I can't broadcast live on YouTube. Somebody reported that. Now, I kind of believe it might have been like a targeted thing, right? Like, you know, this comes on the heels of me being doxxed while doing a YouTube video live of the show with Trump supporters in the chat room, putting my information, some of my personal information out, right? Another thing that was interesting that happened was the fact that I got like some random ass friend requests from like what appeared to be ISIS fighters. Right now, I don't want to stereotype anybody, man. I'm not versed in Arabic. I don't know how to read Arabic or whatever. But it was a page full of Arabic writing, and it was like dudes with machine guns, black, all black on, faces all masked up, and he sending me friend requests. Like, I don't know if that's some sort of like trap or whatever the fuck, but yeah, man, that happened. So you on like me being doxxed, me being having ISIS people to send me friend requests, me having my YouTube shut down as far as like being able to post live videos is concerned. Man, there's been some real funny shit going on with my social media as of late, and I'm just kind of wondering if it has anything to do with what we talk about here on the Span Report, right? It could be, could not be. I mean, you know, it's you never know, but it's just a strange coincidence, a strange string of things that's been going on as of late with me on social media, man. So yeah, I just kind of wanted to talk a little bit about that, right? So of course, man, like I said, we just gonna go ahead and like kind of get it off into the show, man. I know like this ain't like the most explosive opening up for a Span Report, but yeah, man, this is some things that have been going on with your boy, man. And so you know, I got a new segment that I wanted to a new segment that I kind of wanted to introduce to you guys. Now, of course, I feel like I feel like this sort of segment is a little bit familiar for a lot of listeners of the Span Report, a lot of people who live in, especially for people of color. I think this segment will be very familiar to you. This song will probably be very familiar to you. And also, I think that, you know, you will connect it to. Right? So we're going to introduce our new segment. And that new segment on the Span Report is This Week in Racism. All right. God bless the USA. I'm proud to be an American. And it's This Week in Racism. So check this out. We got a story that's coming out of Miami, Florida, right? And there was this story involving some firefighters. And the firefighters in Miami was pretty much just fucking wilding out, right? So we're going to read this story. This here comes out of ABC News out of Florida. It says additional Miami firefighters may be fired in the coming days after six were terminated this week for allegedly placing a noose over the family photos of a black colleague, city officials said today. No one has admitted to or have been charged with the alleged act, City Manager Daniel Alfonso said at a joint news conference this morning with Miami Mayor Thomas Delgado. Thomas Rigaldo and Fire Chief Joseph Zaharoban. Investigators are still working to determine who draped the noose over the family photos. A lieutenant in the City of Miami Department of Fire Rescue discovered on September 9th that his family photos at Fire Station 12 had been defaced with lewd and sexually explicit renderings, Fire Chief Joseph Zaharoban said in a statement Thursday, describing the incident as a hideous, distasteful act of hate. The lieutenant, a 17-year department veteran, is black, according to the city manager's office. Zaharoban has said that he personally responded to the incident after it was reported. It occurred as Hurricane Irma's outer bands hit South Florida. Appalled by my observation, I immediately requested the Miami Police Department investigate the matter and temporarily transferred all personnel assigned to that station per our department policy, the chief said. The investigation revealed that 11 members of the fire department had somewhat involvement in the incident and they were relieved of duty. Additional evidence revealed that six of those individuals, a captain, a lieutenant, and four firefighters who were directly involved in the incident, were swiftly terminated for offenses surrounding egregious and hateful conduct. The remaining five employees were relieved of duty with pay, Alfonso said in a statement. Termination letters sent Wednesday identify the fire members of the department as William W. Bryson, Kevin Mazoso, David Rivera, Justin Rumbaugh, Harold Santana, and Alejandro Sese. ABC News could not immediately reach the terminated firefighters for comment. It was unclear whether they have retained attorneys. Now, interestingly enough, man, like this, this article had been posted and they had the photos of six of the firefighters. They had their photos posted in the, I think it was the Miami newspaper. I forget exactly the name of the newspaper. And the city actually tried to sue the newspaper to have those photos removed because those firefighters were former first responders and whatnot, right? But here's the thing, man. We cannot allow for not only racism to continue to fester and to continue to manifest itself. And we've seen over the course of these last few months, as Trump has been in the White House, that there's a lot of people who have felt emboldened with their racism. And this is another example of that. And not only that, like, yo, why are we trying to protect these motherfuckers? Like, you got to take their photos down. They were former first responders. You know, they're also former first responders who are probably guilty of a hate crime. Right. So why then do we try to, you know, there's this knee jerk reaction to try to protect these first responders, although these first responders are probably responsible for some very heinous shit. And I don't understand why we have this knee jerk reaction to always give these assholes the benefit of the doubt, whether they be firefighters, whether they be police officers. Like, we're always giving these assholes the benefit of the doubt. And, yeah, man, it's just another example of, you know, shit, like, it's just another example of racism rearing its ugly head, consequences being meted out, and then the offending parties acting as if they're victims on the back end. So yeah, that happened in Miami, man. Another fucked up story that kind of happened over the course of the last couple weeks, man, was there was a story of theirs of a college student who was trying to get rid of her roommate and did some really motherfucking disgusting things in order to do that. So let me pull that up. It says, on Saturday, University of Hartford freshman Brianna Brochu was arrested on charges of third-degree criminal mischief and second-degree breach of peace for harassing and intimidating her ex-roommate, Chanel Rowe. Now Brochu, who is white, faces a hate crime charge for the act she committed against Rowe, who was black, the Hartford Courant reports. On Monday, October 30th, Rowe posted a Facebook video that runs more than an hour and a half detailing the abuse she allegedly experienced at the hands of Brochu. Rowe says that in the video on October 17th, when she moved out of their shared room, she was alerted by two RAs and one neighbor that Brochu posted detailed account of her harassment of Rowe, including the tampering of her things. Now, interestingly enough, like, because I know some of you may be familiar with the story at this point by the time I'm talking about it. But interestingly enough, like, I'm kind of wondering, like, why it took after the fact for them to come forward. Like, they saw these things on social media and they hadn't said anything prior to there being charges filed against this young woman. Yeah, like, why did it take that there to be charges filed for you feel like, okay, now I'm comfortable saying something? Furthermore, it says on Monday, October 30th, Rowe posted a Facebook video that runs more than an hour and a half. Oh, I think I read that. One of Brochu's Instagram posts was captioned, finally did it. Your girl got rid of her roommate after 1.5 months of spitting in her coconut oil, putting moldy clam dip in her lotions, rubbing used tampons on her backpack, putting her toothbrush places where the sun doesn't shine, and so much more. I can finally say goodbye, Jamaican Barbie. Brochu appeared in Hartford, Connecticut court today for third-degree criminal mischief and second-degree breach of peace, both misdemeanor charges. In newly released court documents, Brochu admits to licking the plate, fork, and spoon belonging to Rowe. She also admits to putting a tampon blood on Rowe's backpack and mixing Rowe's lotions with other lotions also on Rowe's desk. Rowe states that in court documents that since the two became randomly assigned roommates, Rowe was ostracized by Brochu, who generally ignored her and treated her as a ghost. Brochu was ordered to stay off the University of Hartford campus and to not contact Rowe, according to the Courant. The publication also reported that the West Hartford police seek to add another charge against Brochu, second-degree intimidation based on bigotry or bias, a Class D felony in Connecticut. In a statement on Wednesday, University of Hartford President Gregory Woodward wrote, "As of this morning, Brianna Brochu is no longer a student at the University of Hartford. She will not be returning to this institution. It is unclear whether Brochu will be asked to leave or did voluntarily." Woodward also said that the university took action immediately once these allegations were brought to our attention. But in her Facebook post, Rowe wrote that colleges are known to just sweep issues that happen within the campus under the rug, making the issue disappear and not doing anything about it. And I'm not holding my tongue any longer about my situation because this is just so ridiculous to hear nothing back from my school about this situation. Now, interestingly enough, she's correcting that. Like, there was a story that came out, I believe it was in BuzzFeed, maybe a year and a half ago, maybe 2 years ago, and they were talking about how when young ladies would bring up sexual allegations or sexual assault allegations against the people they go to school with, shit. But they had, like, if they were to bring, like, assault allegations or sexual harassment allegations against guys at their school, I believe it might have been Spelman and Morehouse. And because they are not exactly the same school, but they do link together in some sort of way. But the institution would make it so where they would try to tamp down the allegations, or they would try to do their own internal investigations to keep law enforcement out of it. And that way, keeping the charges out of law enforcement and therefore keeping the statistics low to keep the enrollment high. Right. So there was a concerted effort by colleges and institutions of higher learning where they would pretty much downplay a lot of these sorts of instances, especially concerning sisters, especially concerning sexual harassment, sexual assault. And in this case, racial harassment and racial assault. Right. So, you know, she's not wrong in that assertion that these colleges are going out of their way to make light or try to dampen the amount of things that are happening on their campus because they don't want to have to deal with the Title IX investigations. They don't want to have to deal with the police. They don't want to have these numbers out in the public that can dissuade other people from going to that school and therefore turning down the money. right? Or having their money diminished because of the fact that these people are declining to come to these schools because of these incidents happening there. So no, she's not wrong in that. It says David McGuire, executive director of the ACLU of Connecticut, told Broadly that for us, this highlights something that we already knew all too well. Racism and white supremacy and the problems associated are definitely Connecticut problems as well as national problems. There are many things that have been reported that are troubling. One is that Roe felt silenced by the university. Clearly, someone who experiences racist abuse should not be silenced by the university, said McGuire. Another is that people have been characterizing this as bullying. That is really an understatement. What Roe alleges happened to her was more than bullying, is racism and physical harm. Excuse me. Now, another thing that this article doesn't necessarily talk about is like some of the physical ailments that this sister said that she was dealing with over the course of this harassment. Like she said, she got to a point where she felt sick and that she couldn't talk and that her throat was really sore and like she had a bacterial infection, probably from all the moldy clam bit that she was putting in her lotions or the fact that she decided to take that girl's toothbrush and put it in her ass, like all sorts of like disgusting shit. And she started suffering physically because of the things that this girl was doing to her. So yeah, man, like the fact that even the title of this article, student charged with hate crime for rubbing used tampons on roommate's things, it was like so much more going on there, right? So yeah, man, that's crazy. That's some crazy shit, man. And another instance of white people, racists, like racist people feeling emboldened to do certain things because of, you know, the climate that we have in this country right now. Like, races are all over the place. Like, they're showing their flags, like, all over the place. So, yeah, that happened. Another thing that kind of happened, and this is actually some good news on this week in racism, if there's ever a such thing, right? So, there was a White Lives Matter rally. And, a White Lives Matter rally. And so, there were some counter protesters, of course, at the White Lives Matter rally. And this happened in Shelbyville, Tennessee. I actually went to school in Tennessee, so I'm not really surprised about this shit. But yeah, that happened. It says roughly 200 white supremacists, white nationalists, neo-Nazis, and other assorted members of the alt-right held a White Lives Matter rally today, only to be drowned out by anti-fascist and anti-racist protesters blaring Beyonce songs. So Beyonce out here doing the Lord's work, right? It says the protesters were reported to have vastly outnumbered the rally attendees, according to the local media on the scene. Some of the protesters made ironic signs and held them towards the white nationalists while the sides were separated from each other by police and barricades. One sign read, "Y'all wild." Another side said, "Send nudes." In addition to Beyonce songs, the protesters also played Bob Marley, another black musician, in an apparent attempt to needle the white nationalists. The music was introduced by one protester who said, "This is what your kids are listening to at home right now, by the way." Protesters also blared the speeches of Martin Luther King, effectively shutting down the rally sound system. One of the White Lives Matter attendees claimed he traveled to the event without any racial animosity or motivation. Is that so? Like, that's another thing. That's another interesting thing about, like, the way in which the alt-right and some of the people on that side try to paint their shit as innocuous. Like, they try to act as if, like, well, I don't have any animosity towards black people. I'm just proud of being white. Like, not understanding that, like, the fact that you would even choose a White Lives Matter rally, and white lives mattering has never been a question in this country, in and of itself is a repudiation of the Black Lives Matter movement and what the Black Lives Matter movement is trying to accomplish. And most of that is like, yo, we want some accountability for the law enforcement in this country. We want to have some equal opportunities in this country that are also afforded to white people. We want to be on an equal level playing field. And so for a lot of you guys to even feel like that's a radical thing to suggest, for you to feel like black people or people of color gaining any sorts of advantages or gaining any sorts of equilibrium with white people is some sort of takeaway from you, is in and of itself a racist line of thinking. So, like, it's always funny to me when I hear these people start talking about how, you know, I'm not racist and I don't have any problem with black people or people of color. I'm just proud of being white. Like, okay, yeah, what does that even mean? Right? What does that even mean that you're proud of being white? Like, What exactly are you proud of when it comes to being white? What have you been denied because you were white? What institutions are set up against you because you were white? You know, like, these things don't really happen to you as a white person. Right. So, yeah, It says, in an interview with the local Fox affiliate, he said his grievances had to do with the people on welfare being supported by taxpayers in general. So why aren't you? So if that were the case, we know that the majority of the people on welfare are white folks. We know this. The statistics bear this out. More white people, just by sheer numbers, are on welfare as opposed to people of color. And so you come to a White Lives Matter rally to protest people being on welfare, being supported by taxpayers. You come to a White Lives Matter rally to protest that. But you're not being racist, because the racist assumption is that most people of color are on welfare, and that we are mooching off of the system, and that we are leeching off with the backs of the taxpayers and all this other shit. And trust me, as somebody who pays a lot of money in taxes, like, that's not the first thing that comes to my mind. It's like, yo, it's all black people on welfare. And anybody who has any sort of like brain, right? So yeah, he comes there. He's talking about taxpayers. He's offered a general grievance by sharing an anecdote about apparently being passed over for promotion by a black coworker who he claimed doesn't work nearly as hard as himself. So now you're mad at welfare, and you think you got passed over for a promotion that should have been yours based on what? You say that it's because you think that this black person doesn't work as hard as you do. So that basically means you think that these black people are getting benefits that they should not have. And also that black people are given positions that they should not obtain because that was rightfully your spot. Right? It's amazing how they don't see this shit. A separate White Lives Matter rally was held in a distant Murfreesboro, Tennessee, reportedly targeting the large immigrant community there. The rally was later canceled. The Shelbyville rally ended without violence. One student protester, however, was arrested for disorderly conduct. But while many activists showed up to counter the white nationalism and the far-right ideology on display in Tennessee, perhaps conspicuously absent was Black Lives Matter. They released a statement ahead of the rallies, which in part read, "Gatherings like that, like what will occur in Shelbyville and Murfreesboro, are used as scapegoats for institutions and white America at large. It becomes a chance to point fingers at the obvious racist. In reality, it is both the practice of overt and covert racism that makes these violent and hateful rallies of Klansmen and neo-Nazis possible. It is white America who invited them in, and it is white America who has a responsibility to see them out." So there wasn't even any Black Lives Matter rally participants even in these demonstrations. But yeah, man, you know, they got shot down. They got their shit like kind of shut down by the counter protesters, man. And I'm glad to see it. I'm glad to hear it. We got to call these motherfuckers out, and we got to kind of like put them back in the bottle. I don't know if you can do that, though. I think the toothpaste is out of the tube when it comes to this shit. So a lot of people are being outed. A lot of people are having their shit pulled to the carpet. Yeah, man, this is where we are. This is where we are. And that has been This Week in Racism. That I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the men who died, who gave that right to me. And I gladly stand up next to you and defend her still today. 'Cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless. All right, that's a long ass bumper. I might have to change that. Right. So it's been a minute since we did this, but we got another entrant into the special HOTEP unit. In the black community, pseudo-consciously based offenses are considered especially heinous. In the Yonk right, the dedicated misogynists who perpetuate frauds are members of an elite squad known as a special HOTEP unit. These are their stories. All right, on today's special HOTEP unit, man, we got a new entrant, and that entrant is rapper B.O.B. All right, now B.O.B. is in the special HOTEP unit this week, man, because he did, outside of being one of those flat earth motherfuckers who doesn't believe anything, like, as far as is that confirmation bias shit, like, what, like, we're living in a time right now. Really, really in a time right now where confirmation bias is pretty much at an all-time high, right? Like, you look at how we look at things politically, you look at how we look at things scientifically, like a lot of people, man, if it doesn't line up with their already, like with the way that they think about the world already, they're not even trying to hear it, they're not trying to believe it or nothing, right? And some would probably say I'm guilty of that right here on this mic. I don't know. But Yeah, man, B.O.B. had the audacity to go on record to say that, shit, B.O.B. went on record to say that there is no such thing as slave ships and that there is no evidence that slave ships ultimately existed whatsoever.
Well, that'll be a monkey's bare-assed uncle.
So, we're going to read this story. This comes out of The Root. It says, Flat Earther B.O.B. constantly proves my belief that a person can be a genius in one field and totally clueless in another. So they're editorializing like a motherfucker on here. It says, we previously reported that the talented rapper and singer was raising funds to build a satellite that will once and for all settle the debate on whether or not the planet is a dinner-shaped plate. Dinner plate shaped, okay. Well, B.O.B. recently took a break from his quest to prove that every scientist, astrophysicist, and astronomer for the last 2,000 years didn't know what the hell they were talking about when they said the Earth was round. They probably forgot to carry the one. I do that all the time. This time, he's advocating the belief that the slavery didn't exist because, well, simply because he's never seen one. On Wednesday, B.O.B. posted an Instagram video of a exceptionally conscious dashiki-clad fez wearer explaining how white people not only changed the ancient maps but manipulated all space and time to confuse our understanding. When the European came to power, what he did is change up chronology and geography on the time-space coordinates to disorientate. When the European came to power, what he did is change up chronology and geography or the time-space coordinates to disorient us. So we don't know where we're at, explains the Hoteption. At this point in the video, B.O.B. cuts into the video to show an ancient map. Stop laughing. 1904 can be considered ancient. Didn't I just explain to you that the Caucasians be fucking with time? As he shows the map where Morocco is next to Japan and California, Flatty the Bell wonders if you aren't looking at ancient Jerusalem right next to Illinois. Apparently unaware how compasses, maps, or even cardinal directions work, B.O.B. explains how everyone's directions are off because north ain't south and south ain't north. I know you're screaming, just turn it upside down, but you're using logic and common sense. Perhaps you may have even read a book or two or took an elementary school geography lesson. That's why you're brainwashed. You're not woke enough. But this is the funniest part. The map he's displaying is not some uncovered secret that white people have been mysteriously hiding. It's the ground plan for the 1904 Louisiana Purchase Expedition, more commonly called the St. Louis World Fair. Yes, this nigga is explaining the white supremacist conspiracy to plot with a carnival map. I thought I asked you to stop laughing. Not laughing. Flat Say Jack explains in the caption for the post how this all means you have been hoodwinked and led astray. They say slavery lasted 400 years. America is only 250 years old. You ever seen a slave ship? They can find a billion-year-old dinosaur bone, but they can't find any slave ships. Two things, Mr. B.O.B. First of all, the continent of America existed long before 250 years ago. That's just when the country was founded. It's kind of like your level of understanding is of the second grade, fourth grade, even though you're 28 years old. Secondly, I've seen a slave ship before. Just last week, as a matter of fact, the Smithsonian National Museum of African American History and Culture has artifacts from Sao Jose Paquete de Africa, a slave ship that sunk more than 200 years ago and was recovered in 2014. Okay, I'm not going to keep reading this, right? It's ignorant as fuck that B.O.B. doesn't believe that slavery existed because he hasn't seen the slave ship. But also, man, this editorializing and the way that they're trying to write this shit to make it funny, nah, I'm not following it. It's fucked up that he doesn't think that there's been slave ships. He doesn't think that slavery is real. That in and of itself makes him a Hotepian. That puts him in a special Hotep unit. And yeah, we're going to just leave it at that. Goddamn, that damn writing, man, is fucking horrible. Where's my damn music? Jesus Christ.
In the black community, pseudo-consciously based offenses are considered especially heinous. In the Yonk Rite, the dedicated misogynists who perpetuate frauds are members of an elite squad known as a special Hotep unit. These are their stories.
All right. Now, we've been talking, like, I remember, like, if it wasn't the last episode that I did with Brandon from Where's My 40 Acres, and shout out to B, because I didn't thank him enough for coming on and being with us over here at the Spare Report. But we were talking a bit about Chrisette Michelle, and Chrisette Michelle, you know, going on an apology tour pretty much for, you know, doing her performance for Donald Trump at the presidential inauguration and all of that stuff, right? And so she feels like, you know, she's been ostracized by the black community. She's been canceled by a lot of folks. You know, my wife was just like, yo, she was canceled for me when she told me she had, like, when she said she had a miscarriage and she used somebody else's picture to say that she had the miscarriage. I don't know how true the whole miscarriage shit is, man, real talk. But, like, the whole thing of, you know, I was kind of thinking about the whole Chrisette Michelle thing. Like, one, we, you know, black community kind of told her, like, you know, don't even fuck with that. Leave that alone. And she went on ahead. She did it anyway. And now she's trying to come back and say, well, like, yo, I did all these good things for the black community. Y'all should have got the benefit of the doubt. And now y'all turning y'all backs on me. Although y'all told me not to do this shit and I did it anyway. That, right? But then I was also thinking, too, like, man, like, you know, Chrisette Michelle gets canceled for fucking with Trump. And probably rightfully so. But then these same niggas who were like kind of clapping about Chrisette Michelle being canceled, some of you niggas went out and like purchased fucking Floyd Mayweather, Conor McGregor fights and shit. Although Floyd Mayweather is like in the tank for Trump too. Right. So I kind of wonder what that, like, how that dichotomy works, like how that whole idea, how you split those things off in your brain to where Chrisette Michelle gets canceled, Floyd Mayweather doesn't, although Floyd Mayweather probably should have been canceled for beating his wife or his ex-girlfriend or the mother of his children, but whatever. Right. So another person who has been kind of catching the I shouldn't have fucked with Trump vibe as of late is none other than comedian Steve Harvey. So Steve Harvey is kind of feeling like, yo, man, I fucked up. I shouldn't have been messing with fucking Trump. It was the worst mistake of my life, right? So we're going to read this story here. This comes out of the Daily Mail, right? It says, Steve Harvey is attempting to save his new talk show by distancing himself from President Trump after his ratings took a hit due to fallout for taking a meeting with Trump in January. The 60-year-old relaunched his daytime show when his previous program was set to be canceled because the host refused to sign his contract before he was getting a raise, because he was getting a raise and couldn't move his show to... Because he wasn't getting a raise and he couldn't move his show to Los Angeles. As a result, Harvey's talent agency decided to launch a new show, simply retitled Steve, for the comic based in Hollywood in an effort to keep the show going. The retooled show premiered on September 5th after a few months of preparation, and both ratings and reviews for the program have been less than stellar. Sources close to the production of the told Daily Mail that they believe the poor numbers reflect the fallout from Harvey's black audience after he met with Trump in January. Now Harvey is turning on the president in a desperate bid to save his show, proclaiming, "Meeting with Donald Trump was the worst mistake of my life." A source close to the production told Daily Mail, "People just hate the show. He wanted to do a late night feel for the show, but he's on a big stage with a desk and a lot of open space, and nothing about the show is engaging or warm. People just aren't into it at all." Harvey's first daytime talk show, called Steve Harvey, premiered on NBC in 2012, boasting a strong 2.2 in ratings and was a solid performer for at least half of its run. When the revamped show Steve premiered earlier this fall, the show debuted at a 1.8, but quickly dropped to a 1.4 in the ratings. For the first time, his once popular talk show was being beat by Wendy Williams in the ratings, and he's neck and neck with Jerry Springer and Rachel Ray. Hold on, man. Oh, shit.
Well, that'll be a monkey's bare-assed uncle.
It says, the source explains Steve couldn't have continued to survive with the first version of his show with the ratings because the show was produced out of Chicago and was less expensive to produce. But doing a daily show out of Los Angeles costs big dollars, and with his current ratings, there's no way in hell WME IMG can continue to bleed money like this into a sinking ship. Harvey faced tremendous backlash from his TV and radio fans when he paid a visit to Trump Tower in New York City to meet with Donald Trump in January. African Americans were outraged by the images of Harvey being chummy when the then president-elect, and so many called for boycotts against the comic. Harvey was dismissive and defiant despite the backlash and lashed out at his fans for challenging his decision. Now, who also did that? Right? Chrisette Michelle was also very fucking defiant. She kind of lashed out at those people, like, yo, we need to be seen and all this other stuff, as if, you know, like, and I said this then and I'm gonna say this now, it's not that we're not being seen, those people just don't give a fuck, right? We said this then, they chose not to listen. They chose to turn their back on the people who have been supporting them for the longest time and trying to curry some favor with people who have made it clear that they don't fuck with us. And this is what they, and this is the end result. It says, the source said that this is the moment his brand took a hit. He had been through a few scandals before, the divorces, the Miss Universe pageant, and the Asian joke gone bad, but he had never faced the wrath of his core audience before, middle-aged African Americans. And unfortunately for Steve, he was too arrogant to realize the weight of his mistake and never made amends to his loyal followers for it. Since then, the ratings for the Harvey Game Show Family Feud took a dip, and the audience for his variety show Little Big Shots dropped by almost half. But it wasn't until the ratings for his revamped talk show started suffering that Harvey acknowledged his glaring Trump error. During interviews to promote the show, he revealed that he regretted taking the meeting. Here's the crazy thing. I'm supposed to be on a boat for my 60th birthday, so my wife says, Steve, just take off and skip the meeting. You'll meet with him some other time. God, I should have listened, Harvey told the Hollywood Reporter. The Daily Mail previously reported that Harvey desperately wanted to move his daytime show to the West Coast because his third wife, Marjorie Harvey, wanted to live in Los Angeles to work on a TV career of her own. She has branded herself as a fashion expert online and runs a website called theladylovescouture.com. Now, you know, I remember when I was talking about the Chrisette Michelle thing, man, like I was talking about how, like, yo, all of these people who went to Donald Trump and who had met with Donald Trump to, and they were talking about as if they were representatives of the black community. You had Jim Brown who went to go meet with Donald Trump. You had Ray Lewis who went to go meet with Donald Trump. You had Steve Harvey who went to go meet with Donald Trump. You had Kanye West. You had Chrisette Michelle. All of these people went to either go meet with Donald Trump or go perform for Donald Trump. And all of them said they went there for all these altruistic reasons. Like, we're going to talk to the people in power and we're going to try to get something back for the black community. We're going to get something tangible back. And Steve Harvey talked as if, you know, we're going to get some sort of programs going with the Department of Housing and Urban Development, because Dr. Ben Carson is the head of that department. And we haven't seen anything from that. We haven't seen anything from Jim Brown going to meet with Donald Trump. We haven't seen anything from the Chrisette Michelle. They didn't even bother to let her even get an audience with Donald Trump. She performed and they kind of scuttled her ass on out. So, like, all of these people decided, like, yo, I'm going to go against what the vast majority of the black people or black Americans want. And I'm going to go ahead, I'm going to take these meetings and I'm going to make myself known to have had these meetings and meeting with this guy and trying to, like, normalize him in a way that I think this guy's going to be good for us. He's going to make sure he looks out for our community. We're going to get our concerns met. We're going to get our concerns heard. And yet and still, we've seen nothing. And it's been a year. Absolutely nothing. Right. We've seen a lot of rollbacks on some of the things Obama was trying to put into place. We've seen a lot of rollbacks of that. This administration is pretty much just to be put in place, or has been put in place, to roll back a lot of the advances that were incrementally being put in place by the Obama administration. A lot of that shit is being rolled back now. And there's a lot of folks who are at fault for that. And I would say those who did not vote and those who decided that that Hillary Clinton and or say even maybe Bernie Sanders, who thought that they were one and the same, that the things were going to continue to go the same way that they were, like, not knowing that, like, being apathetic in that way can affect you in a much more disproportionate negative way, right? So, yeah, man, Steve Harvey is feeling the brunt for basically, like, kind of thumbing his nose at his audience, man. Like, yo, there are consequences to be had, man. And here's another thing too that I think is very interesting, right? So, you know, I've been seeing, like, some of the, you know, and this is not to say that everybody does this, but I see a lot of this, like, when folks say, well, like, well, we can cancel Chrisette Michelle, we can cancel Steve Harvey, we can cancel, you know, all these people, but we can't cancel the NFL, we can't stop watching the NFL, or we can't do this to, say, for instance, yeah, we just stick with the NFL, for instance, right? We can't do that. And I think the one thing that people who have that line of thinking miss is the fact that, yo, Steve Harvey, Chrisette Michelle, and all of these famous people like Kanye West, a lot of them, they're being propped up by your support, by primarily black support. Black people have kind of put them on and elevated them in a way that they've gained legitimacy in the larger space, because black people have given that seal of approval that this is authentically us and this is cool with us. And therefore, the larger societies tend to kind of gravitate towards, okay, we like the stuff that come with black people. We might not necessarily like black people, but we like a lot of the shit that they kind of put out. So what ends up happening is, yeah, we elevate them, right? An entity like the NFL isn't elevated by us, right? Like, we can withdraw support for the NFL. We can stop watching the NFL. We can stop buying merch for the NFL. We can stop playing fantasy football. We could do a lot of those things. But the fact that the biggest difference between the two is the fact that, like, yo, even if we do that, they're promoted and they're upheld by white folks and the larger society as a whole. So even despite our lack of support for that, that thing can still survive. That thing can still thrive despite us, right? Now, I know, like, a lot of the players are, like, the vast majority of the players, the people of color. And now are you trying to, like, what do we do? Can we create our own league? I know a lot of people talk about us creating our own league and stuff like that. I know a lot of people talk about pooling our resources. We got to, you know, do this group economics thing and whatever else. But the thing is, like, you got to get everybody on that same page. And black people, like everybody else, everybody doesn't think the same way. Right. You're never going to get all of blackness to agree on one thing. Right. You see that now. Like, just take, for instance, with Donald Trump, 10% of black men, I think 13% of black men voted for Donald Trump in this last presidential election. What the fuck were those niggas thinking? Right. What the fuck were they thinking? You're never going to get 100% agreement on everything when it concerns black people. You're just not going to do it. And so, yeah, man, it's just one of those things where, like, we look at what's happening with Steve Harvey and Chrisette Michele and the cancel, you know, and cancel culture and how we look at this thing. I think a lot of times, you know, black people tend to be a little bit anti-black when they say, well, we can cancel these things, but we can't cancel these larger entities that actually aren't being penned up by us, that aren't being elevated by us. They're being elevated by other entities and other groups of people. And we are in addition to that. Right. So, yeah, man, that's crazy. And that's going on. Another thing that I kind of want to talk about, and that's another, oh shit, damn it. what I didn't know, because I'm like, kind of like rusty. It's been a minute. It's been a week or so. This is What in Blue Blazes.
What in Blue Blazes is going on out here?
Did this nigga just say Blue Blazes? All right, so yeah, that whole Steve Harvey shit was part of What in Blue Blazes too. So that was a thing. Another story that was going on in What in Blue Blazes, man, is the fact that one of the brothers of the Las Vegas shooter had been arrested because he was suspected of having child porn. So we get this story here out of NBC. It says the brother of the Las Vegas shooter who killed dozens of people and injured hundreds more during a country music concert has been arrested on suspicion of possessing child pornography. Stephen Paddock's brother, Bruce Paddock, had been arrested in Los Angeles on suspicion of possessing child porn, authorities said. Bruce Paddock's arrest was confirmed by a law enforcement official briefed on the investigation but not authorized to discuss it publicly. Bruce Paddock was not considered a suspect in the Las Vegas shooting. The official said that the child porn case predates the shooting. It wasn't immediately known if he was an attorney. There were 58 people killed and hundreds more wounded October 1st at the Route 91 Harvest Festival on the Las Vegas Strip. Stephen Paddock opened fire from the 32nd floor of the Mandalay Bay Casino Hotel Tower. Another brother, Eric Paddock, spoke to media following the shooting, but Bruce Paddock did not. Now, initially, I thought that when they was talking about the brother of the Las Vegas shooter, I thought it was the guy who was always on the TV running his mouth, right? Like, I was like, man, like, that whole family, you probably should just throw that whole damn family away. Like, real talk, you got the one brother who goes out and he kills 59 people or 58 people and injures hundreds more. You got the other brother who's bragging about how much money they got. And then you got another brother who's out here, like, with the child porn. They should just toss that whole motherfucking family in the river. Like, just throw the whole damn family away. Start over. Just start over, man. Drop the bomb on them. Right? Like, because... child porn, like that Paddock name, like, I think that everybody who's associated with them now is probably gonna, like, yo, we gotta figure out something, we gotta change the name up or something, we can't be associated with these assholes no more. Like, I don't even, like, we gotta do something. Maybe we can go, like, Theo Riddick, like, we can change our names to Riddick or something. Like, maybe Riddick, not Paddock, but Riddick, something like that. We can switch it up. They gotta do something. But yeah, man, that's going on. And that was What in Blue Blazes.
What in Blue Blazes is going on out here?
Did this nigga just say Blue Blazes?
All right, so we got another segment, man. And this is actually some good news, man. You know, every now and again, man, we get hit with the bad news when it comes to people and their relationships or whatever else. But every now and again, you get some good news. So let me pull this up. I can't believe some white dude tried to redo my granddaddy song. What's wrong with you, man?
You're tied up, you better stay tied up, because it's cheaper to keep her. This is from T. It says, it's cheaper to keep her.
Scottie Pippen learned. Scottie Pippen took this advice. It's cheaper to keep her. So let's see. Where is it?
When your little girl make you mad, and you get an attitude and pack your bag.
So... according to the Daily Mail, Scottie Pippen and his wife Larsa Pippen have decided to call off their divorce. Since Scottie Pippen and Larsa Pippen are officially back on and have agreed to call off their nearly $120 million divorce. The on and off again couple who have been married for 19 years and share 4 children, have agreed to dismiss their legal split case in court, according to TMZ. The couple filed jointly in Florida's Broward County Court on Thursday, and the judge's signature is now all that awaits the pair officially getting back together. The pair had called it quits in October 2016 and then reconciled briefly in June. The sportsman, 52, and the former Real Housewives of Miami star, 43, reconfirmed their intentions to divorce in August, then reconciled yet again in September. In September, the family moved to as a unit from Miami to Los Angeles due to their basketball player's son transferring to Sierra Canyon, which is one of the most prestigious basketball programs in the country. Is it? I never heard of it. Since the Pippins were married in Chicago in 1997 and have 4 children, Sophia, Justin, Preston, and Scottie Jr. 6-time NBA champ Scottie, who was mostly known for his sterling partnership with Michael Jordan on the Bulls, filed for divorce in October 2016. At the time, he was believed to accuse Larsa of cheating on him with the hip-hop chart topper Future. Scottie allegedly alleged irreconcilable differences and demanded ultimate responsibility for the couple's 4 children in his filing. The couple had a prenuptial agreement in place. In her response, Larsa's lawyers claimed that the couple had signed a revocation of prenuptial agreement in November 5th, 2015 and asked that the 1997 document be set aside. She also asked for an equal split of the couple's marital assets and shared custody of their 4 children, as well as a court-enforced parenting plan, child support, and alimony payments. But all of that is null and void now. They are back together, man. And they followed that advice, man. Granddaddy was trying to tell them. And they followed it. And now they know. That's why Jupiter Keeper. They know. It costs too much to leave alone. Yeah. Jupiter Keeper. I know it's cheaper to keep her. Alright. Cause you gon' pay some alimony if you leave home. It's cheaper to keep her. Alright, so yeah, man, that was cheaper to keep her. Now, alright, Granddaddy, shut up. Yeah, man. So, yeah, we got that going on, man. Scottie Pippen and Larsa Pippen have decided to stick together. Hopefully they can, hopefully, you know, like everything's really, really good and it's not just like some temporary thing. But, yeah, man, it's always kind of good to see people, you know, just like, yo, like cooler heads maybe have prevailed. And we, you know, I might have jumped the gun on that one, baby. You know what I'm saying? I was wrong. My bad. You know, because I think a lot of times, man, for a lot of people, man, it's hard to say I was wrong. You know what I'm saying? And that might, I don't know what's going on in their relationship, but yeah, I think a lot of times, man, if people were just more willing to just admit, like, yo, man, I fucked up. My bad. I was wrong on that one. I'm sorry. Like, if people were actually willing to do that, man, we'd be in much better places a lot of times, man. So, yeah, that's going on, right? So now, we going back, we got to go back into some newsy shit, man. We're going to go into some, where's my news music? Breaking news. Where is it? There we go. All right. So, hold on. What's this, Cliff? Oh, well, okay. Yeah. Yeah, so check this out. I'm going to talk a little bit about Tyrese, man. I'm going to talk about Tyrese here, man. So I know when me and Brandon was on here last, or was that Halloween, we talked a little bit about, you know, he was in concert and he decided to do a special rendition of Let's Get It On, singing to his daughter. Tyrese has been in the news, or pretty much like some of the gossip blogs, a lot lately because of some of the antics that he's been pulling on social media. And one of the biggest things that kind of happened for Tyrese was the fact that, yeah, he had like a breakdown, so to speak. Like the man was crying and whatnot on I think it might've been Instagram. And of course, you know, folks put it on Facebook and YouTube and what have you. And so, yeah, I'm going to share a little bit of that with you guys here in a minute, because we're going to kind of break a little bit of this down. We're going to kind of dissect some things here. So let me go ahead and screen share with you guys here. Let me pull this up and play this.
This is all I got. This is all I got. Don't take my baby, okay? I've been away from my baby for 2 months. I just want my baby, and no one's listening because no one's in the courtroom. I'm not doing anything illegal. I'm not doing anything illegal, but I don't want nobody. Oh my God, am I doing something illegal by doing this video, or is this, am I protected by the First Right Amendment or the amendment? Don't take my baby. I'm at $13,000 a month. What more do you want from me? Oh my God.
Oh. All right, so he's paying $13,000 a month in child support. He's having a custody battle with his ex-wife over his I believe his daughter's 10 years old, something like that. And like, this comes on the heels of Tyrese being having some really strange movements on social media, right? So we first started getting like hints of this shit here going on when he had this little beef. He's got his ongoing beef with The Rock. Right. So The Rock has decided that he's going to have a spinoff movie from the Fast and the Furious franchise. Right. It's going to like be a Hobbs movie. Him and I believe Jason Statham are kind of spinning their shit off into some other things. Right. And Tyrese has been like really vocal and adamant about The Rock not doing that. Right. Like, you know, we feed family. We stick together. Don't do this. They're going to push this movie back and everything else. And for a minute, like, everybody really could not understand, like, what the fuck is Tyrese doing? Like, why does he care so much about The Rock having a spinoff movie? And I mean, like, honestly, like, you kind of look at these spinoffs as other opportunities for them to branch out, have more characters, and maybe Tyrese could have had a role in some of these Hobbs movies. Who the fuck knows, right? But Tyrese decided to kind of go thermonuclear and put the shit out in the public, like on social media. He's on Instagram, he's on Twitter, popping shit at The Rock about the fact that The Rock is getting his new movie coming out, and it's going to push the Fast and the Furious 9 movie back, I believe, maybe, what, 2-3 years or something like that. Maybe it doesn't come out till 2020 or 2019 or something like that. So folks were like, yo, what's up with Tyrese, man? Like, what's going on? Why the fuck does he keep coming at The Rock this way, coming sideways at him? And so, like, The Rock, you know, he hasn't really said much about it, right? Hasn't really said or going back and forth with Tyrese on it. It's pretty much just let Tyrese go out there and do his thing. Tyrese is out here looking really motherfucking messy. Right, looking really messy. Like, dude, you putting all this shit out here in the streets, man. It's really not anybody's business. But you felt like if I put this out in the street and make it everybody's business, maybe The Rock will look bad. When really is you looking like a little, you looking kind of foolish out here in these streets, man. And then another thing was like, okay, so the Fast and the Furious movies are being pushed back to possibly 2019, 2020 because of the fact that they're going to have the spinoff movie for Rock and his character Hobbs, and they're going to go forward with that project, right? And so folks were kind of like, okay, well, so why is Tyrese so mad? And then Tyrese comes out and he says, well, like, yo, I'm broke, right? Tyrese says, I'm broke. Reveals this, like, yo, this is the reason why I didn't want them to move this movie back. Tyrese needs the money. And then you'd be like, okay, well, damn. You kind of sit back and you analyze. You be like, well, damn, like, Tyrese, you're a multi-talented dude, man. Like, you got, you have other avenues. Like, why are you sitting back and just waiting on, why are you sitting back and you're just waiting on this one movie in order for you to get money, right? Like, you got, you've been in multiple movies. You can be in other films, right? Like, why don't you try to get your agents to kind of get you into some other projects, you know? Or you were in a singing group. Like, you not only are you a solo artist, but you were also a part of a group. And you look at that situation. So say, for instance, like, Tyrese has kind of like created this ultimate storm of people not really wanting to fuck with him. Right. So like, you think about the fact that Tyrese was in a group, TGT, that was with Tank and Genuine. Right. And part of the beef with the group was the fact that, like, Tyrese was out here trying to big time on the group. Like, yo, man, I got the biggest name. I'm in these Fast and Furious movies and I should get the biggest cut out of the three. Right. That was his beef. And Genuine was like, yo, nigga, they still playing pony at graduations and motherfucking weddings and shit. You can't go to a random reception and they don't play pony, nigga. My shit still big. And that shit came out in 96, nigga. I'm still eating off pony, nigga. So like, Genuine got a legitimate gripe. Like, yo, nigga, like, we can just split this shit in thirds. Like, why you got to be the big? Why you trying to big time on us? Because you in these Fast and Furious movies. Now you ain't even in the Fast and Furious movie and you getting mad because homeboy getting another movie and your ass might not be in it. And you getting mad talking about you broke. Now you done fucked up two streams of income. You done fucked up your Fast and Furious money. You done fucked up your TGT money. And yeah, you got your own shit going on, but why ain't you out here doing more shows, right? $13,000 in child support. Yeah, that's a lot of fucking money. It's a lot of fucking money. And so, yeah, I mean, I'm not in a position to pay anybody no damn $13,000 in child support. It's a lot of goddamn money. But ultimately, like, even if you were paying $13,000 a month, you had a lot. You had multiple streams of income. I can remember there being, It was a video that had Tyrese like kind of walking through his house and shit. He was trying to stunt on somebody. He's walking through his house. He's got an outdoor theater and shit. He's got bowling alleys and shit in his house. He's got marble floors and all this other shit. And how here you are bitching about having to pay $13,000 in child support for your daughter and claiming to be broke. Now, another thing that kind of happened with Tyrese over the course of the last few weeks was he stated on social media that Will and Jada Pinkett Smith gave this man $5 million. To help him with his legal fees and to get his ass to stay off of social media. What the fuck does Tyrese do? Tyrese gets his ass on social media and Tyrese posts that Jada and Will Smith gave his ass $5 million to stay off social media. So he couldn't even do that. And one thing I thought was really interesting about that is the fact that, like, yo, man, if, say, for instance, if I loan a friend some money, man, if I saw a friend of mine was in some trouble, man, and they needed some help, and I decided to loan them some money, I guess I'm a different kind of cat, man. I don't really want everybody to know that I did that. You know what I'm saying? Because it almost kind of like opens you up to every, like, you know, to some other people, like, feel like, oh, well, shit, he got it. Well, shit, hook me up, nigga. Like, you know, I'm in a real tight spot, man. I just need like $150, my nigga, you know, just kind of get, like, I need to help with this light bill or whatever else. Like, and I might have it, I might not. But now I'm being put in a position to where everybody thinks I'm just supposed to give, right? And so the thing with Tyrese, like, he puts this out here that, like, Jada and Will Smith gave him $5 million to help. See, my nigga in the chat room already talking about, let me hold something. His house bigger than mine. Come on, bruh. So you got that thing going. But then ironically, man, like, the shit that's even more fucked up is that you got representatives for Will and Jada Pinkett Smith saying, like, yo, man, we ain't got that nigga no $5 million. Like, I don't know where y'all got that shit from. We ain't gave him no $5 million. So, you know, I wonder if they really did give him the money and they just didn't want anybody to know, or whether or not they did not give him the money and he just, like, trying to save face, or whether or not he might really be going through some sort of mental breakdown, right? It's a whole lot of shit going on with Tyrese, man. A whole lot of strange shit that's going on with him. And it's kind of reminded me a little bit of what was going on with, like, say, for instance, remember we were talking a lot about Cat Williams a couple years ago, when Cat Williams was, like, constantly getting arrested, constantly having altercations with folks, man, getting choked out by a 12-year-old in the park, man. Like, you know, we worried about Cat Williams, man. We haven't seen a whole lot of Cat Williams since then. I think he made an appearance at the Def Jam 25th anniversary for Def Comedy Jam or whatever else. But, like, you haven't seen a whole hell of a lot about Cat Williams after that. And you just kind of wonder, man, you kind of wonder what's going on with Tyrese. Like, could this be some sort of mental breakdown? Could this be, you know, some sort of cry for help, so to speak, right? But then you got another contingent of folks. You got another contingent of people who kind of hold these niggas up as, like, the virtues or, like, as the pillars of black fatherhood, right? And, like, there's a, you know, the one thing about, like, holding certain guys up is, like, the pillars of black fatherhood, like, there's always some problems with these dudes that they decide that they want to hold up, right? So I remember, like, last summer, you know, there was, like, the talk of LeVar Ball, and LeVar Ball being the pillar of black fatherhood. Like, a whole lot of brothers was, like, holding up LeVar Ball, like, yo, man, I wish my father was as involved. I wish my father was, like, my cheerleader like that, had my back the way that LeVar Ball got his son's back and everything else. But at the same time, what they decide to, like, kind of conveniently ignore is the fact that, like, yo, LeVar Ball is out here really just putting targets on his son's backs. He's out here writing checks that his ass doesn't have to cash. Somebody else has to cash those checks. And he's putting more visibility on his sons that they don't necessarily need at this particular point in time. You look at what's going on with LiAngelo Ball over in China. You know what I'm saying? Like, you kind of wonder if LiAngelo Ball is going to be able to get out of his, or whether or not his daddy's mouth is going to be able to get him out of what's going on over there, right? And, you know, you got that kind of thing going on. But this thing with Tyrese, man, is, like, you know, As a matter of fact, I think I got a video, man. There's this guy that was kind of speaking up about Tyrese, and he feels like Tyrese is important to Black Fatherhood. So I'm going to play a little bit of this video so you guys can check this out and see for yourself. Let me go ahead and play it. I'm going to try to share this.
Yeah, what's going on, family? It's your man, B Miles, coming to you live once again with another video from the B Miles 84 Conscious Channel. And this afternoon, I want to come to y'all with another video, man, talking about the situation about, you know, Tyrese, man, was actually, like, I'm crying over his daughter about how the court system, you know, allowed them to, like, take his daughter away, and then this baby mother actually got his daughter. And when I was actually looking at the video, man, like, I might have certain things about Tyrese, Tyrese I might disagree with, but I'm going to say in this particular situation, man, like, my heart goes out to the brother, man, because, you know, for this man to actually, like, come up on social media, man, and for him to, like, cry out, you know, about his daughter and all that, and he talking about how when the real fathers show up, how they always want to, like, try to find a way, you know, to, like, keep the fathers away from them, you know, it's a very sad situation, because when I'm looking at that, man, I'm seeing this man, you know, crying out in tears, man, literally in tears, because that was his firstborn, and that is his daughter, stuff like that, and it just really made me sad into my heart, you know, to see that, because it really goes to show you how, you know, quote-unquote, you know, Black fatherhood is actually, you know, quote-unquote, Black fatherhood is actually under attack, man, and how the court system, how they would use the women against the men. And it's really, really sad, because I hear a lot of our women talk about there's a lot of deadbeat daddies, there's not a lot of, quote-unquote, Black men that's trying to step up to the plate to try to be fathers and all that. But every time when there's a real man who want to come around and stuff like that, they always want to, you know, drag him in the mud, and they always want to use him up, and they always want to let the court system do him dirty, or they always want to say there's no Black fathers. But now that we have this man coming on social media, this man is crying out, and now this man got to pay $13,000 a month in child support. It just really saddens me, because we have a lot of good, quote-unquote, Black fathers that are in our community who really want to do right. And there's a lot of, quote-unquote, Black men who really want to step into the plate, and they really want to be fathers, and they really want to be husbands and fathers to them, to their wives and their children. And it really saddens me to see this brother cry out, man, because he's saying that they really trying to take his daughter away. And, you know,
All right. One thing that I think needs to be understood here, man, we talk about the attack on Black fatherhood all the time. We talk about the child support system. We talk about the court system being involved in a lot of these situations. Right. And one thing I will say is this, man, like, ultimately, there are a lot of Black fathers who are involved in their kids' lives who haven't had the court systems involved in their situations whatsoever, and they do what they're supposed to do, and they don't have to go on social media at any point in time to cry out for their daughters, right? And it's a tired trope. It's a tired motherfucking talking point to keep bringing up. The system is getting involved and keeping Black fathers away from their children. Like, there's a whole movement going on right now with guys talking about the men's rights, like MRA motherfuckers, like men's rights advocates and stuff like that. There's these ads. Like, if you listen to sports talk radio, man, you ever hear Adam, the American Divorce Association for Men? And they talk about, you know, being able to keep fathers involved in the kids' lives and stuff like that. Now, I get it. Like, you know, there are some fathers, man, who may be in situations where, you know, the mother of their children is being very antagonistic towards them, maybe using children as pawns against them. I'm not discounting that whatsoever. But I do think at some point there we have to kind of stop and think and look at these situations and stop always trying to hold up these prominent dudes as examples of Black fatherhood being under attack. And we saw this with LeVar Ball. A lot of brothers took LeVar Ball and they cheer for him, they rah-rah for him, because they think that everybody who does not like LeVar Ball is attacking LeVar Ball as a father. And that's furthest thing from the truth. They just think LeVar Ball should probably shut the fuck up sometimes. It's not that difficult. It's not that hard to do. That's pretty much what most people would think about LeVar Ball. And even so much with Tyrese. They just kind of feel like he should probably shut the fuck up. And so with some of the things, man, like, say, for instance, like, I got this thing, man, where I'm not necessarily the biggest fan of, like airing all of your shit out on social media, right? And so I've talked about that a few times where say, for instance, we were talking about like when people discipline their kids, man, when they beat their kids on video, or whether or not they do some embarrassing things and they put their kids on video, or they put them out on social media, and now they want everybody to kind of comment on it. They want everybody to have something to say about what they're doing with their kids and whatnot. And I hate that shit, because ultimately, when you don't get the opinions that are agreeing with you, then all of a sudden it's nobody's business. But when everybody is patting you on the motherfucking back about what it is that you're doing, then you feel like you're the greatest motherfucking parent on earth. And so, like, nah, man, I kind of feel like this entire situation with Tyrese and his daughter, he's put this shit out publicly. He's talking about it on his concerts. He's talking about it on social media. He's all over the motherfucking, like, doing interviews about the shit. Like, it's nobody's business, bro. Like, a lot of this shit could have been handled underneath the surface and nobody would have known, dude. It's none of our business. But when you put this shit out here and you don't get the opinions that you think would be favorable towards you, then all of a sudden it's not our business. So I'm not really a real big fan of the airing of everything in your life about social media. As open as I am on this show sometimes, like, I know my wife is probably like, nigga, you talk too much about some of the shit. But yeah, man, like, everything doesn't need to be known about your life on social media. Another thing that I thought was very interesting, man, like, you know, guys are like kind of holding up Tyrese as like this, you know, another example of a black father trying to be involved in his children's lives. And then you hear of Tyrese not even doing his daughter the service of showing up during one of his visitation, his appointed visitation visit. So check this out. Hold on a second. Tyrese. I thought I had this in my pocket, but I don't. So let's see. Let's read this. This comes out of Essence.com. And it says, there's a lot going on with the Tyrese situation. Too much, in fact. A new report alleges that the singer is skipping visits with his daughter, Shayla, which is odd considering his taped and tearful plea to his daughter. According to Page Six, a source close to the singer's ex-wife, Norma Gibson, says that he was granted 4 recent visits with a third-party monitor who is a clinical psychologist, but that he disappeared before 2 of them. The source added that 2 more visits were scheduled for the weekend. However, Tyrese has already shared on Instagram that he plans to be in Abu Dhabi. Amid the drama between his ex-wife and visitation, Tyrese and his wife, Samantha Lee Gibson, may or may not be expecting. In a recent Instagram post, Tyrese wrote, "Ask around, I am in love with the Lord Jesus Christ, who sent me an angel named Samantha Lee Gibson, who I'm madly in love with. I don't drink, smoke, or do drugs other than our new child. Shayla is and was my first and only pregnancy." Insert surprise emojis, surprise eyes emojis here. And another thing, like, it says, take... this is a lot to take in, so we understand if you need to take a breather. We hope the rumors about the singer skipping his visits with Shayla aren't true, but it's hard to know what's real and what's not in the world of Tyrese. Now, like, you know, it kind of makes it hard to have sympathy for a dude who's talking about them taking his child away when you may be skipping out on visitation with your kid, right? Kind of makes it hard for people to be sympathetic to your plight. And as much as you put out on social media about what's going on for you, for your kid, for The Rock and the movie and the Fast and the Furious and the Hobbs and all this other stuff, man, it's a weird thing. It's a weird, like, ball of shit going on with Tyrese. And ultimately, man, we just kind of hope that things don't turn out tragically, right? We hope that nobody gets hurt. Like, we hope that nobody has any, you know, accidents or anything like that, because, you know, the brother looks kind of unhinged, real talk. And that's not being, hyperbolic or anything, man. It's weird, man, when you talk about people's mental health, especially, like, sometimes within the black community, man, you talk about mental health, man, folks kind of turn their nose up at it, like, you know, we are immune to it, and we're not. Sometimes it's all right to just go and talk to somebody. Sometimes it's all right to do that. Tyrese may need to do that off of social media, right? Like, you know, I don't know, it's something weird about just getting on, like, social media and airing out all of your shit to a whole bunch of people who not really caring about what's going on with you, man. A lot of folks are just going to do nothing but look at you, point and laugh and click on to the next thing. And that's what's going on with Tyrese right now. A lot of folks pointing, a lot of folks clicking, a lot of folks laughing, moving on to the next thing. You've seen a string of fucking celebrities come out and start making videos mocking this dude because he was crying about his daughter. Right? Now, we talked about him, like, was that when me and Brandon was on here last Halloween, we talked about him. And I kind of joked and laughed about it because I was like, well, I honestly thought it was just like kind of strange that he would remake of all songs, Let's Get It On, with his daughter or for his daughter. But, you know, ultimately, man, you just kind of hope that shit is all right and shit turns out okay for these people, man. So, yeah, man, something wrong with y'all. Something wrong with him. And, yeah, that's what's going on in the world of Tyrese. Now, we got some more politically aimed shit that I kind of wanted to speak to. And I didn't get a chance to speak to this last week because I was so busy, man. Real talk. But we're going to talk about this Donna Brazile shit and the hacking of the DNC. So there was a story that came out of Politico last week. It was basically, it was a bombshell, man. Like, folks were really, really buying into this whole thing of the DNC hacked or pretty much rigged the primaries season last year in favor of Hillary Clinton, right? And so Donna Brazile, who was installed as interim, like, chairperson of the Democratic National Committee last year after the ouster of Debbie Wasserman Schultz, she was running the DNC up to the convention, and she's written a book, and she's out to sell this book, and she talks about the possible rigging of the elections for Hillary Clinton. Now, you know, interestingly enough, you know, we've talked about this here on the Spare Report a lot. I've kind of like talked down a bit to Bernie Sanders supporters, and I'm gonna be quite honest with y'all, I don't regret it at all. Because even with this, I still feel like people aren't really paying attention to the things that really matter, right? So let's go here. So one of the things that I thought was very interesting is that when this political story came out was that, you know, folks automatically, like, especially a lot of the Bernie people, a lot of Bernie Sanders supporters were coming out like, man, see, I told you they was rigging that shit, man. Hillary Clinton was stealing the Democratic nomination from Bernie Sanders. And she just as corrupt as Trump, man. She just as fucked up as Trump, man. She's no different than Trump. And like, I'm sitting here and I read the story. And it was interesting how in reading the story where she says she didn't find any evidence whatsoever of there being rigging of the primary season, right? It says, where are we? This is the political story. Actually, this story comes out of Vanity Fair. But on this part of Vanity Fair, it says that although he eventually campaigned for Clinton after she clinched the nomination, Sanders spent the next several months claiming that the primary system was rigged against him, only to be roundly dismissed by party leadership. But according to Donna Brazile, who served as the interim DMC chairwoman after Debbie Wasserman Schultz's ouster, Sanders' accusations were hardly baseless. In her new book, Hacks, an excerpt which was published Thursday in Politico, Brazile says that she found concrete proof that the Clinton campaign stacked the deck. An August 2015 document outlining the joint fundraising agreement between the DNC and the Hillary Victory Fund and Hillary for America that effectively allowed Clinton to control the DNC's purse strings. Now, interestingly enough, those same sorts of joint fundraising agreements is something that Bernie Sanders also signed on to as a candidate in the Democratic Party. One thing that will not and cannot be dismissed, especially here, is that Bernie Sanders is not a Democrat, right? I need this to really be understood by anybody who's still a Bernie Sanders supporter, who thinks that Bernie Sanders was robbed last year, who thinks that the DNC was rigged against Bernie Sanders last year. Bernie Sanders is not a Democrat. And the reason why this is important, and I think, and the reason why I believe that a lot of you really need to take heed to this, is that the Democratic Party owes Bernie Sanders absolutely nothing. Bernie Sanders has been an independent senator for quite some time. He may lean and caucus with the Democrats on legislation, but he has not made himself a part of the party. Bernie Sanders has not contributed to the party financially. He has not contributed to the party's legislative base. Like, he has done none of these. He has done none of that. Right. So when you think about the fact that Bernie Sanders, as an independent, knows that he can't run a legitimate presidential campaign without the backing of a political party, because a lot, like, you think about this, man, like, when was the last time we haven't had a real legitimate third party candidate come up in a long time, right? In a long time. And it's not as if it can't happen, is that the work that's needed to make it happen tends to get frowned upon. Right. So you got a lot of people who, like, say, for instance, Jill Stein, and who's running for the Green Party. And you had, I believe, the Johnson guy who was running for the Libertarian Party. You got these people that are running, but they don't have the grassroots. Like, they don't have the apparatus in every state. They don't build their party up from a grassroots level, from state legislatures to town halls. I mean, to city governments. They don't do it from a district level. They don't do it and build their party up from within. Like, they just don't do it. It takes too much work. They want to go for the big shot, right? So they're going to go for president, and hopefully after they get the presidency, then they can sprinkle some shit around on the country, right? And it doesn't really work that way. You got to work yourself up from the ground up, not from the top down, right? So Bernie Sanders, running as an independent, knows that he probably wouldn't have a legitimate shot as a presidential candidate, right? So what does Bernie Sanders do? Bernie Sanders decided he's going to run in the Democratic nomination process, right? Bernie Sanders signs on to this joint fundraising agreement for the Democratic National Committee. The only thing is, Bernie Sanders decides he's not going to take actually fundraise for the Democratic National Committee. He's using the Democratic National Committee only for the purposes of him getting visibility. Right. Bernie Sanders is running. He's being he's running as a Democrat. He's being invited to these Democratic debates. Like, it's kind of hard to be in a debate with yourself. Right. Like, nobody, like, of course, like, is he going to run on town halls the whole time? Like, can he do independent town halls? He's not debating against anybody. Like, of course, like, you know, folks look at Hillary Clinton like it was a coronation. Like, she had no one really running against her. It was Hillary Clinton, Martin O'Malley, and Bernie Sanders, pretty much. And then, you know, there was some other people that really didn't even scratch the radar. Right. But Bernie Sanders really had no demands, or he had no credence really to kind of like demand things from the Democratic Party, right? But one of the things that I think that I think got lost in the whole Donna Brazile thing was the fact that she said, you know, they were talking about the joint fundraising agreement and Hillary Clinton, you know, having control of the DNC's purse strings, right? It says the agreement signed by Amy Dacey, the former CEO of the DNC, and Robbie Mook, with a copy to Mark Elias, specified that in exchange for raising money and the investing of the DNC, Hillary would control the party's finances, strategy, and all the money raised. Her campaign had the right of refusal of who would be the party communications director, and it would make final decisions on the other staff. The DNC was also required to consult with the campaign about all other staffing, budgeting, data, analytics, and mailing. So I'm going to say this. If somebody is in trouble and they borrow some money and they're going to continuously borrow money from you and they're dependent upon money from you, I do believe that, like, yo, you got some things to say about the money that you're spending, correct? You're going to have some things to say about the money that you're spending. Now, also, I also believe that Bernie Sanders could have wielded some of the same influence had he actually contributed during this joint fundraising account or this joint fundraising agreement that they had with the candidates. Also, what also got missed was the fact that most of these decisions didn't take effect until the general election. Totally got missed. Now, interestingly enough, like, Donna Brazile is selling this book, and a lot of the buzz around this book is centered around the idea that the DNC rigged the election towards Hillary Clinton. And Donna Brazile has no problem whatsoever having that idea out there if it's going to sell more books. But then she kind of shoots her own self in the foot, because then she comes right back and says that she found no evidence of Democratic Party was rigged whatsoever. So this also comes out of Politico. It says Donna Brazile, the former interim chair of the Democratic National Committee, said Sunday that she found no evidence that the 2016 Democratic primary was rigged in favor of eventual nominee Hillary Clinton, seemingly walking back her recent stinging criticism of the electoral process. I found no evidence, none whatsoever, that the primaries were rigged, Brazil said during a Sunday appearance on ABC. Last week, the scathing excerpt from Brazil's upcoming book, Hacks, the inside story of the break-ins and breakdowns that put Donald Trump in the White House, published by Politico magazine, detailed what the former DNC chair described as an unethical agreement between the Clinton campaign and the committee that she claims allowed the Democratic candidate to exert control of the party long before she became its nominee. I had promised Bernie Sanders when I took the helm of the Democratic National Committee after the convention that I would go to get to the bottom of whether Hillary Clinton's team had rigged the nomination process. I needed to have solid proof, and so did Bernie. After learning of the financial agreement between Clinton and the DNC, Brazil wrote, I had found my proof and it broke my heart. The remarks were widely interpreted as a blunt accusation of favoritism by the DNC chair, though she stopped short of saying the actual voting process was rigged. But Brazil appeared to temper her claim Sunday, disputing the characterization of the process as being rigged to favor Clinton over Sanders. The only thing I found, which I said I found the cancer, but I'm not killing the patient, was a memorandum that prevented the DNC from running its own operation, Brazil added. Brazil also addressed reports that she had contemplated calling to replace Clinton on the Democratic presidential ticket with former Vice President Joe Biden over questions about Hillary's health. A lot of other combinations. This is something you play with in your mind, Brazil said, adding, the bottom line is she resumed campaigning. Now, the thing with, like, sometimes coming out with something very fucking salacious up front is that the correction never really gets the attention that it deserves, right? You see this a lot. Like, say, for instance, one of the biggest ones that I've seen recently was the fact that, like, with Nicki Minaj's brother, and we'll talk about that on the next show, but Nicki Minaj's brother, when he was being accused of having sex or raping an 11-year-old girl, that Nicki Minaj was the one who was out here defending him and bailing him out and paying for his defense team and everything else. That got a lot of play and a lot of, like, in the news and, like, even in rap battles. Remy Ma talked about her defending a pedophile and everything else. Come to find out, it wasn't Nicki Minaj at all. It was Nicki Minaj's mom who put her house up to pay for the defense of her brother and all these other things. But that didn't get the attention that it should have, and that didn't get the attention because it wasn't as salacious. And much the same way that this isn't going to get the attention that it should have, and it won't because it's not as salacious as the fact that people want to believe that Hillary Clinton rigged that goddamn election, right? People want to believe that. Even people so far as, like, say, for instance, Elizabeth Warren. Elizabeth Warren was asked point blank whether or not she believed that the Democratic National Committee rigged the elections towards Hillary Clinton. She flat out said yes. And then she walked that back. Like, all of these people who are coming out saying that they believe this thing was rigged. I'm going to say this, man. Although there are a lot of people, rightfully so, who may not necessarily be, you know, fans of Hillary Clinton, Bernie Sanders is really, like, not our, like, the savior that he is promoted to be. And I think that needs to be I think that needs to be said. Bernie Sanders is not the nigga that people think he is. You know, folks talk about Bernie Sanders being for, like, you know, he's the only one that speaks to our concerns, you know, like, you know, Bernie Sanders let, you know, those two Black Lives Matter girls come speak at his rally. And it's like, yo, if you talk to Marissa, that ain't how that happened. Marissa Johnson, she says that's not how that happened. They stormed that stage and they took that over. That's not how that happened. If you talk to Bernie Sanders himself, like, this is the interesting thing for people who think that Bernie Sanders is about, you know, upholding civil rights and everything else. Like, Bernie Sanders is the one right now going out over and over again telling people we need to get away from identity politics. We need to get away from the politics of separating ourselves into groups. We need to stop talking about Black people's issues. We need to stop talking about gay people's issues. We need to stop talking about women's issues. But what we really need to do is we need to focus on these white, middle class, working class voters. The same people who are now a part of the Trump coalition, we need to kind of bring them into the fold. We need to talk more about their issues. We need to make them feel comfortable here in the Democratic coalition. Or because Bernie Sanders isn't a Democrat, we need to bring them to our fold. We need to bring them into our coalition. So now Bernie Sanders is telling you, He is telling you, like, yo, I am not concerned with your issues as a black person when it comes to maybe police brutality. I am not concerned with your issues when it comes to homosexuals being discriminated against in the workplace. I am not for your issues if you're talking about women in the glass ceiling and being able to make the same amount of money that the man makes and doing the same work. We're gonna focus more on the issues of the white working class voter. So he's all about identity politics, just the white identity politics, right? You gotta have the right identity in order for him to be okay with the identity politics. If you are talking about black issues, then we probably should stay away from that. If you're talking about gay issues, and we should probably stay away from that. If you're talking about women's issues, and we should probably stay away from that. So you got that going on. And make no mistake, like, we Bernie Sanders supporters, just this last election, over 10, like, I think they said 13% of those people went on ahead and voted for Donald Trump. Think about what that means. Like, they have no fucking link to you whatsoever. Like, they really feel like, you know, a vote for Donald Trump is a vote for them and a vote for America. And think about what Donald Trump's presidency means towards people who look like you. Now, if you, like, it's not a good look whatsoever. And then I think, again, when we talk about Bernie Sanders not being a Democrat and Bernie Sanders feeling like the democratic process was rigged against him, like, dog, you don't go here. Could you imagine somebody going to a school, or better yet, somebody not going to a school and running for student council president and actually being mad that nobody wants to, like, he didn't win the shit. Like, he may have gotten some votes from the people at the school, because people may have known him outside of the school. But can you imagine him being mad at the process because he didn't win? Can you imagine, like, say, for instance, like, yo, like, you know, you winning a race, you winning a nomination, you winning an election by nearly 4 million votes. And the guy who lost to you says that he lost only because the process was rigged against them. Can you imagine, like, if Hillary Clinton is out here right now on a book tour talking about what happened, and people were telling Hillary Clinton she needs to go away, she needs to shut up, the 2016 elections are over, and all this other shit. And here we got Bernie Sanders still being out here able to say that the elections were rigged against him. He lost the election. Right? Now think about this. Hillary Clinton lost 2016 to Donald Trump, right? And people don't want her to say anything. Bernie Sanders lost to her in 2016, and he's still out here thriving. He could talk about how rigged the process is all he wants. I wonder why that is. Something wrong with y'all. Bernie people, I would say. And I'm probably not going to have, I can't worry about that. But yeah, man, like, this entire, like, you know, the Bernie Sanders, the elections was rigged sort of shit, it's tiresome. It is tiresome. But, yeah, that is what it is. But yo, man, it's time for me to go. I got some things to do. But before I go, of course, I gotta let you guys know how to get in touch with me here at the Spin Report Podcast. Let your voice be heard. Go ahead, hit me up at the hotline at area code 313-288-0485. That's area code 313-288-0485. Leave those voicemail messages. Of course, I will play those messages on the show, respond in kind. You can, you know, call into these shows live also, man. Use that number. Call the show while we're doing it, and we can have some conversations here as well. Hit me up on the email, man. Email me here at feedback@thespinreport.com. That's feedback@thespinreport.com. Leave me those emails. I will read them and play and like respond to them and shit right here on the show. Also, Twitter and Instagram. Follow your boy on @Mr_Span. Follow me there. Watch the shows here on Crowdcast, but you can also watch them on thespinreport.com, man. www.thespanreport.com. Watch the shows, vote on the polls, leave comments, the whole shebang, man. Leave, you know, donations. You can donate to the show as much as you like, as often as you like, and it's always appreciated here. Yeah, man, I gotta go, and I will talk to you guys again later this week. I promise. I got a lot of shit to talk about. So yeah, man, we're gonna do this again sometime later this week. But until next time, fam, peace.